Happy Sabbath. And hello to our friends online. I know Barbara's out there, and Amalia's out there, and Victoria's out there, and Karen's out there, and Darina's out there. We got a whole bunch of folks that are listening to us today, and that's good. Well, you know, a few weeks ago, we all finished the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And what's interesting about that festival, it's a food, it's a festival that has food as a lesson, as an object lesson. The Feast of Unleavened Bread is a time to focus and explore the life of Jesus Christ in us, and uses food, the unleavened bread, as an object lesson to have a spiritual outcome. Now, some are new to this way of life, and we do practice the biblical food laws as modern Christians. We're going to find out more about the biblical food laws and why we keep them. So in Exodus 19, we can start there. We're going to browse through Exodus a little bit to get our feet settled in a place where we can understand. Exodus 19:5, it says, "Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine." Well, this portion of Exodus, it is right before the Ten Commandments are given, and then there are other laws and regulations that are given after that, and the progression ends up in chapter 23, warning the nation of Israel not to make any covenants with the nations they would go to possess. And then we see in Exodus 24 where Israel confirms the covenant. And so we're going to go there into Exodus 24:1. And he said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall they, the people, come up with him." So Moses came up and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice, said, "All the words of the Lord, which he said, we will do." And Moses wrote these words of the Lord. And he rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain. And this is where we have the 12 pillars that are set up there according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Verse 5, "Then he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrifice and peace offerings of oxen to the Lord." And verse 6, "And Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people, and the people said, 'All the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient.'" And verse 8, here's a really, really important point. "Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people. It went all over them. And this blood is the covenant, which is the Lord has made according to all these words." The covenant, this first covenant, was sealed by the blood. It was a condition of the covenant that this blood be spilt and placed upon the people of Israel. This first covenant is reaffirmed in chapter 34 after the incident of the golden calf. And now the new covenant would be introduced by Jesus. And that new covenant is also covered by his blood as our sacrifice, as a condition of the new covenant. The blood of Jesus seals the covenant between you and God. His blood covers us all and makes a new, better covenant possible. So we have affirmed, as the Israel of God who we are in this church, a new, better covenant with the blood of our sacrifice, Jesus. Matthew 26:26, I think I used this last time I spoke, 26:26, and it says, "As they were eating, Jesus took bread, blessed it, broke it, gave it to the disciples, and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.' Then he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, said, 'Drink of it, all of you, For this is the blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remissions of sins. This new and better covenant, using food as an object lesson, by the way, does not do away with the first covenant made at Sinai. This is really an important part when we're talking about food laws and why we keep food laws. This new and better covenant, let's simply say it's an update to the law. It's an amendment to the law. The required sacrificial system had been improved upon by how? By the admission of a new high priest that serves forever. So the Levitical priesthood is no longer needed. And this new high priest of the order of Melchizedek, he is the personal sacrifice. And his blood is the one that sacrifices the requirements that were previously required under the old covenant. Now, other elements of God's covenant are still in effect for his people then. Us, the Israel of God. The holy days, they're still in effect. The Sabbaths, they're still in effect. How to treat people correctly, that's still in effect. How to administer justice, yes, that's still in effect. How to remain a holy people, yes. These commands remained, and they're integrated into the new and better covenant. Jesus makes the matter of the law really crystal clear in Matthew 5. So Matthew 5, 17 and 18. And this is where Jesus says, I did not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill, to satisfy, and execute the law. So he said in verse 17, do not think I came to destroy the law or the prophets. So the words that all these prophets wrote, they're still valid. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not one jot or tittle by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. So the law is still complete. The law is still whole, but there have been amendments made to it because we have a new high priest. They're not done away with. Jesus came to fulfill, satisfy, and execute the law as the high priest. And he's the final arbitrator of justice and law also. So who are we in this covenant agreement? We are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, the people of God, the Israel of God. And we as a people have agreed and ratify the new covenant with our hands and our minds. We have physically and mentally agreed, as when Moses took the blood of the covenant before the hearing of the people, when they said, all the Lord has said we will do and be obedient. I believe that is in our mind too. So we, the church, the ecclesia, because we are the church, the building isn't the church, we are the church. Peter says this in 1 Peter, just to reaffirm 1 Peter 2, verses 9 and 10. And he goes on to repeat, you are a chosen generation, royal priesthood, holy nation. And he says that we have been called out of darkness into a marvelous light. And we were once not a people. We were all strangers. We didn't know each other. We were just people on the street. But now we're the people of God, and we have been given God's mercy. And Paul goes on to say we're also special because in Galatians 6:16, it identifies the church as the Israel of God. So now returning to our story, summarizing real quickly, we are that spiritual Israel that now exists today. We are directly related to the children of Israel who made that first covenant. We are a continuation of that family that God is creating. And in taking and being baptized and having the blood and the wine on the Passover service, we have accepted that new covenant. Returning to the story. So let's think of a baby on a kitchen floor playing while its mother is occupied cooking. And the baby, by impulse, start taking stuff off the floor and sticking it in the mouth, whatever they find. And the baby's not thinking clearly. The baby's just infant. There's not a lot of thinking going on. What's it doing? It's using impulse. Impulse. Oh, look at that. That looks fun. I'm going to put that in my mouth. The baby is not using intelligence, right? In the same notion, think about this. God took this nation, Israel, slaves. They didn't know what year it was. They didn't know what month it was. They didn't know how to worship the Lord. They're ignorant. He took this infant nation to move them from impulsive desires, impulsive actions, to intelligence and knowledge of God. So God took Israel, the infant nation, to help move them from impulsively hurting themselves and hurting others. And like a baby, they began to apply and use understanding, wisdom, intelligence to demonstrate and exhibit the love of God to God and to others. They were learning how to be godly people. So now God led the children of Israel into the land of Canaan. Land of Canaan, full of pagan lifestyle, customs, what I like to call low-budget Egypt. And what we would call today, we call that the world. We call that the world. And he leads us today through this strange land with confused customs and traditions. But yet we're still to be his holy people. So now we're all told to bear the name of Israel. The Cambridge Bible for Schools and Colleges Commentary says about the name Israel. The word means he who strives with God. Because it comes when Jacob was having that altercation, and he who strives with God. It says the name is clearly a title of victory from the root meaning to persevere. The Israel of God, the church, is not striving or struggling against God, but striving or struggling against the pagan lifestyles, the carnal lifestyles, the customs of what some of us call the world. That's what we strive against, and we're striving to be in character and representation of God. That's the name of Israel, which is on us. So this striving for the same purpose with God, we have agreed to have a covenant relationship with him. And in turn, God will be our salvation. Now here's where we look at the food laws. This is where it gets the aha moment. So we look at the food laws in the Bible, which are still in effect in the new covenant. And this part of the covenant was not amended. It wasn't done away with by just having a new high priest. Food was used in the old as well as new covenant as a tool to train and identify whose God's holy people are. The food laws and lessons are placed in our minds as the Israel of God. And we think about the book of Genesis, for instance. Now, if any of you listened to Rick Shaby this morning on the webcast, he started with Genesis. He started talking about how Adam and Eve, they took of the wrong fruit. Another food lesson. That's where it starts. So now let's turn to Deuteronomy 14. Let's go back to the Old Testament now. And back to looking at the Deuteronomy summarization of the covenant that was made. So Deuteronomy 14, verses 2 and 3. Real simple. He says, "For you are a holy people to the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you to be a people for himself, a special treasure above all peoples who are on the face of the earth." Verse 3, "You shall not eat anything detestable." And then Moses goes on to repeat the food laws that were earlier given in Exodus 11. And the food laws identify that God has reached into our lives, and there are physical standards here he is giving us. We can look at Leviticus 11, which I'm going to say is the big, loud scriptures today. Leviticus 11, that is where all the food laws are listed. The last two verses, 44 and 45, it says, "For I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves, and you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth. For I am the Lord who brings you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy." So now we have a standard of holiness that God is imposing upon us as a condition of the covenant by not eating things that are detestable. It's about holiness. Health is in there too, but certainly it's an identifying factor that says we are holy people to God. This is why we are called. This great theme speaks loudly and clear. Consecrate yourself, and you shall be holy as I am holy. Now, we're living our existence before God. God gives us a tool called food to bring spiritual results. We know that traditional Christianity does not really agree with that, and they will argue with every one of us if they get a chance. So let's prepare ourselves for those arguments that come up in the New Testament. We're going to go to Mark 7. This is a long one, Mark 7. We've gone there before, and it just continues to give and give and give. It's a good set of scriptures. So Mark 7, 1 through 15, and this is used to give the impression that the food laws were done away with. But a closer look and closer understanding shows that's not what was being discussed at all. Verse 1, "Then the Pharisees and some of the scribes came together to him, having come from Jerusalem. Now when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled," that is, unwashed hands, "they found fault." Boy, did they find fault. "For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the traditions of the elders." Then the Pharisees and scribes ask him, verse 5, to Jesus, "Why do your disciples not walk according to tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?" And Jesus answered and said, "Well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites? As it's written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me.'" Verse 7, "And in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandments of God, you hold the traditions of men." And it goes on talking about pitchers and pots and washing and all that. Verse 9, "All too well you reject the commandments of God that you may keep your tradition." So when he had called the multitude to himself, he said, and this is where the Christians will try and nail you. He said, "Everyone, understand, there is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him, but the things which come out of him, those are the things which defile a man." He's talking about dirty hands and dirt on the bread that was already clean. And that is what goes into the man, and that's what comes out of the man. It's just dirt. The issue that Jesus was getting across here, it's the spiritual aspect of what really defiles us and makes us unholy. And in this case, it was the traditions of men made equal to the law of God. That's what defiled these people. They made up some rule and made it equal to God's rules. Another misunderstood section of the Bible, Acts 10. This is the story where there's a sheet that comes down. Peter's taking a nap and he has a dream and he sees this sheet come down with a bunch of animals on them. Acts 10, 9 through 13. Talks about, you know, Peter went to the housetop to pray and he got tired. He was hungry. They're making dinner for him, lunch, and he saw the sheet come down. And in verse 12, it was full of all kinds of four-footed animals of the earth, wild beasts, creeping things, and birds of the air. And a voice came to him and said, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "No, so Lord, for I have never, never eaten anything common or unclean." And a voice spoke to him again a second time, "What God has cleansed, you must not call common." And this was done three times. And the object was taken up into heaven again and disappeared. So on the sheet were all kinds of four-footed animals and beasts. And Peter said, "No, I won't eat these." Now, assuming the vision meant he should eat unclean animals, Peter spontaneously responded, "Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything common or unclean." At this point, many readers are thinking, it's about food. It's about food. But, on the contrary, after seeing the vision three times, he still wondered within himself what the problem was. Verse 19, Peter thought about the vision. The Spirit said to him, "Behold, three men are seeking you. Arise, therefore, go down to them, doubting nothing, for I have sent them." This is the story of Cornelius, a Gentile who's calling Peter for counsel and asking him into his home. Acts 10, 28, this is the clincher. Then he said to him, "I know it's unlawful for a Jewish man to keep company or not go to one of another nation. But God has shown me I should not call any man uncommon or unclean." There, it defines itself. It's talking about mankind and nations. It's not talking about eating unclean food. It demonstrated God was beginning to offer salvation to members of any race. Gentiles whom God was calling were now welcomed into the church. And far from abolishing the instructions against unclean meat, these verses actually show that years after Jesus had died, Peter was still keeping clean and unclean food laws. We got time for another example. Daniel. This is a quick story. In Daniel 1, we have the story where him and his friends, I guess you want to call them, were taken to Babylon because they were smart. There was no blemish. They were good looking. They were gifted in wisdom. They were quick to understand, and they could quickly catch on to the Babylonian system. But verse 8, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. How? By eating the portion of the king's delicacy and the wine he drank. And he requested that he may not defile himself. See, he knew. And Daniel said to the steward, "Please, give us 10 days, give us vegetables and water." And as the story goes, his appearance cleared up and they were all healthy. And the servants of the king began giving all the young people the vegetables and the water. But this example just gives us vegetables and clean water as contributors to good health. But what about meat eaters? Some of us just like our meat. The Bible goes into basic details describing what healthy meat is. God calls it clean. And other creatures that are not healthy, not made for human consumption, are called unclean. Clean and unclean. This is where Leviticus 11 provides an outline of the foods permitted. And animals described as unclean are not suitable for the children of Israel's consumption. Why? Because they are to be holy as God is holy. There were no specific reasons given why some animals are eaten and not eaten, but you have the notion of scavengers, whether it is pigs, bears, vultures, wolves, lions, cheetahs, sea creatures, lobsters, crabs on the seafloor, shellfish, oysters, clams, mussels. These are basically organic natural filters of pollution. a vulture, for instance. You know, how is it that a vulture can eat such nasty, rotting, diseased flesh? Well, God created them that way by making such strong acid in their stomach, nothing can survive. But we don't eat a vulture because you are what you eat. And think what that thing eats. All right, well, I'm gonna gross you out for a couple more minutes now. What about insects? You know, in 2023, truth is stranger than fiction. Honestly. In an article titled "The Food That Can Feed and Maybe Save the Planet: Bugs," by Sandy Lamont, written on CNN's online health page, October 25th, 2019, quote, "On a morning in the not-too-distant future, you might toast bread made with cricket flour, drink a protein smoothie made from locust powder, and eat scrambled eggs made extra creamy with fat from caterpillars. And you can have a side of mealworm bacon." And it goes on to say, oh, this is going to be so much more healthier for you. Another article, this was written by Roberta Stanley on a website called The Modern Farmer. She writes in February 2023 that the consumption of insects is gaining interest in North America and the European Union, where they're seen as a replacement for animal protein and a weapon against climate change. Well, how would you guess that? All right, one last article written in 2022, and this was by Reuters, and they're a financial publisher of stuff, says, pet food makers are increasingly using insects such as flies, mealworms, and crickets as a sustainable source of protein in pet food and treats, capitalizing on rising pet ownership, booming demand, and, of course, being environmentally conscious. So farm bugs require far less land. I'm sure they do. Less water and feed than livestock and emit less greenhouse gases. Now get this. The U.S. insect plant will have the capacity to produce 60 metric tons. That is 120 million pounds. Think of a pound of flour. That's 120 million. That's a big number. A protein, 20,000 tons of oil, and 400,000 tons of fertilizer just from insect waste. They are also aiming to produce insect-based ingredients for human consumption in products such as yummy energy bars and sport drinks. What's weird is not all insects are bad. You remember the story in Matthew of John the Baptist? In those days, John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness saying, "Repent, the kingdom is at hand." Verse 4 says, "Now John himself was clothed in camel hair and with a leather belt around his waist, and his food was locusts and wild honey." His meat was locusts. That was his food. These locusts were commonly food of the common people back then, and the Greeks believed only the vilest of people would eat them. And because we're running short on time, I'm just going to tell you what it says in Leviticus. This is interesting. Leviticus 20 says, "All flying insects that creep on all fours shall be an abomination. Yet these you may eat of every flying insect that creeps on all fours, those which have jointed legs above their feet, which is to leap on the earth. These you may eat." Here's the list. It's a short list. "Locust after its kind, the destroying locust after its kind, the cricket after its kind, and the grasshopper. But all other flying insects which have 4 feet shall be an abomination." Now, this doesn't include that yummy mealworm bacon. Okay, this is not worm. This is creepy little guys on feet. Leviticus 41 says, "Every creeping thing that creeps on the earth shall be an abomination." Period. "Whatever crawls on its belly." I think of those delicious grubs we're missing. You don't eat them. Verse 43, "You shall not make yourself abominable with any creeping thing that creeps, nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, lest you be defiled by them." Daniel didn't want to get defiled. Who knows what that king was eating back there in Babylon? To summarize, so why does God identify some animals as suitable for human consumption and others as unsuitable? God didn't give laws just to be arbitrarily to assert control over other people. He gave his laws, including clean and unclean meats, that it might be well. This is from Deuteronomy 5:29, that it might be well for those who seek and obey him. And that the children of Israel, as we've read before, could be holy as the Lord is holy. We're told to bear God's name. We agree to have a covenant relationship with him. To be holy as he holy, and in turn, he will be our salvation. So while we continue to move forward on the narrow road we walk with Jesus, God gives us a tool called food. And food is used with God's holy people to bring spiritual results.